It's time to eat.
What are you hungry for?
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Joe Dolan.
Feed me now! I'm starving!
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby! It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast presented by DraftKings, and we are here to help you win your season-long, your DFS. We just want you to win. And by we, I mainly mean he. I mean, he's the star. His name's Joe Dolan, at FG underscore Dolan, the fantasy gangster. Use the code 22FEAST over at fantasypoints.com. A, so that you get the great content at fantasypoints.com. B, so I get a little credit for it. They know I sent you. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. We are at Ross Tucker Pod. And Joe, I don't know about you, man, but after week one, I still go about 75% on my preconceived notions, 25% of what I see in week one. After week two, I'm like 85%. Okay, what I've seen the first 2 weeks is what they are, 15% preconceived notion. So we know a lot more, at least in my mind, about these teams after two games than we did after just one. So let's dive right into the Steelers and the Browns. What do we know about these teams from a fantasy perspective?
Well, what we've got now here, Ross, is the Steelers are catching 4.5. 38.5 is the total. So the money has come in on the Browns and the under with Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh had an absolutely appalling performance against the New England Patriots. I don't know. I mean, here is my guess. Barring him lighting it up in week three, I think the Steelers will have an opportunity to take their long break heading into week four and make the switch to Kenny Pickett, because I don't know how much longer they can keep up with this. Mitchell Trubisky is averaging 5.1 yards per attempt on his 71 throws so far. The Steelers have scored 30 points on 24 possessions, okay? They have punted at the second highest rate in the league. This offense is abominable. The good news for the Steelers is this. We already know Jadeveon Clowney isn't going to play for the Browns. We already know that Chase Winovich is not going to play for the Browns. He's on IR. And Myles Garrett popped up on the injury report on Tuesday with a neck injury. So there is a chance that Myles Garrett doesn't play in this game. Maybe the Browns are just being cautious. We'll learn more today. But that is a potentially significant piece of news for Mitchell Trubisky and the Steelers. Now, Deontay Johnson has seen 10 or more targets in 15 of his last 19 games. That has not changed with Mitchell Trubisky. It's just that target volume is not translating into big plays. It's not translating into touchdowns. This Steeler team cannot get in the end zone, and it is horrifying. I'm not sure how much better it'll get with Kenny Pickett, but I can very confidently say Mitchell Trubisky ain't it.
Well, it'd be hard for it to get worse. What about the Browns on offense, Joe?
They had a major collapse against the Jets. We know that. Nick Chubb, this is like the second consecutive year. It was 2 years ago. Todd Gurley, when he was playing for the Falcons, scored a touchdown that was a bad touchdown because it allowed the opponent to get back in the game. Nick Chubb did the same thing now. The Browns still needed an absolutely historic collapse. But how about this? This is with Jacoby Brissett, by the way. The Browns have scored on 52.4% of their drives. That is tied with the Bills and the Chiefs for the most in the NFL. The Cleveland Browns. So Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are getting touchdown opportunities. Nick Chubb, by the way, is averaging more yards gained per play. Everybody's like, the old adage is this, that you throw to go ahead and you run to seal the lead. Not in the Browns' case, because when Jacoby Brissett throws on early downs, he averages 5.7 yards per attempt. When Nick Chubb gets a carry on early downs, he averages 6.3 yards per attempt. So it's actually more effective for the Browns in the early going to run on early downs than it is to throw. So Nick Chubb is awesome. The Browns offense, by the way, after a huge target share for Donovan Peoples-Jones in week one. He didn't catch one in week two. He only had one target in week two, and Amari Cooper came out and had the big game. So he's on the wide receiver three radar for the Browns. But this has been a pretty efficient offensive attack thus far. The problem is the markets just do not believe that's going to continue in this game against Pittsburgh. They're expecting a slop fest on Thursday night. The Steelers, all their trends suggest this is an under game. The Browns' trends suggest this is an over game. 38.5 is a pretty low total. I don't know.
What was the Browns percentage they're scoring on?
So, by the way, a lot of these stats that I'll be throwing out today are from Graham Barfield's stat pack on fantasypoints.com, powered by our Fantasy Points data package, which we're excited to unveil. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. So Ross, if you use the code 22FEAST, you get all these stats and more.
I like it. But what's the scoring percentage?
So they have scored on 52.4% of their drives. That is tied with the Bills and the Chiefs for the most in the NFL.
That's kind of bizarre that all three of them are tied at exactly 52.4%.
Yeah, it is strange. But, if you're scoring on above 50% of your drives, you're doing something right. That's a score, by the way. Not touchdowns, a score. But
no, I know.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling great, Joe, about either New Orleans or Carolina from a fantasy perspective.
Well, okay. So let's look at the line here. This opened at 2, New Orleans giving 2 on the road. It's been bet up to 3. Ross, the markets would agree with you, because the total of this game opened at 42 and has been bet down to 40.5. So the first two games we're talking about are extremely low totals for the NFL. Here is what's happening with Carolina. The Panthers, this is per Rich Rebar, by the way, are needing to gain 8.4 yards on third downs on average, which is the most in the NFL. And they're throwing the ball exceptionally much on early downs, which is totally bizarre given how Baker Mayfield is playing right now. Christian McCaffrey has had back-to-back games without 30 yards receiving since 2017. It's the first time since 2017 that's happened. One thing that I think that the Panthers are going to do is bench Shy Smith, their slot receiver. Every time I looked up at Shy Smith during that game in week two, that awful loss for the Panthers against the Giants, he was essentially making a mistake, dropping a pass. Shy Smith has been targeted 9 times this year. He's gained 14 yards on 9 targets. That is horrible. You would say a guy getting 9 carries and 14 yards is horrible. Well, when he's getting 9 targets and he's got 14 yards, that's really bad. What I would like to see, Shy Smith is getting 9 targets, DJ Moore has 12, okay? If you're going to be throwing the ball with the frequency the Panthers have thrown the ball on early downs, DJ Moore should have more targets than he does. That is an absolute fact. I'm not saying anything that I shouldn't be saying. I would like to see them put DJ Moore in the slot a little bit more. He's a great slot receiver. He's only run 19% of his routes from the slot so far this year. I want to see that change. I think Shy Smith is going to come out of the lineup, and maybe that'll be an increase of Terrace Marshall snaps. It'll be an increase of Rashard Higgins, who hasn't played an offensive snap, but Rule mentioned he wants to see LaVisca Chenault out there. Good luck with that. But there's something that's not working from the Panthers, whether it be their game plan, their personnel usage, or both, and it's most likely both.
New Orleans?
Yeah, so obviously Jameis Winston did not play well in that game against Tampa Bay. He's playing with a broken back. By the way, very even target distribution for Jameis Winston. Michael Thomas, 17. Chris Olave, 16. Olave, by the way, averaged over 20 yards per, like, average depth of target on 13 targets. Jameis is just throwing him YOLO balls out there. Last week. And then, of course, Olave had the bad fumble at the end, but I don't expect his role is going to change. They drafted him in the first round for a reason. So Michael Thomas has 17 targets, Chris Olave 16, Jarvis Landry 14, Juwan Johnson 12. Juwan Johnson, by the way, who's available in virtually every league out there, is 4th on the Saints in targets. So keep that in mind. Michael Thomas is the wide receiver 10 right now, so he's back. Obviously, the big news here that we're going to find out today, practice reports, is Alvin Kamara going to play this week. He was out last week with the rib injury. Mark Ingram looked pretty good, but he's had some ball security issues. You would think Alvin Kamara is going to get his traditional bell cow role, or that kind of pseudo bell cow role where he gets a lot of targets in the passing game when he returns from injury. Hopefully it's this week against Carolina.
Houston is in Chicago. Not exactly another big fantasy matchup. Maybe a little Damian Pierce or David Montgomery?
Yeah, so, okay. So the total has actually been bet up in this one. It was 39. It's now up to 40 and a half. And you know what? I'll give Lovie Smith some credit, by the way. He said we didn't get Damian enough touches, and he acted on it. Damian Pierce comes out in that game against who did they play this week? The Broncos. I was going to say the Colts. They played them in week one. In that game against the Broncos, Ross, Damian Pierce played 62% of the snaps, up from 29% in week one. He had 15 carries for 69 yards rushing and a catch for 8 yards. That was up from 11 carries for 33 yards in week one. Meanwhile, Rex Burkhead's snap share fell and didn't receive a single carry. So Damian Pierce is on the flex radar right now. The question being, how many points are the Texans going to score? Now, this is a weak opponent, the Chicago Bears. But by the way, the only really Texans you can really consider for fantasy are Brandon Cooks and Damian Pierce right now. So we'll flip over to Chicago. Ross, that game on Sunday night was a massive, massive red flag for me. You are down 17 points. You're down multiple possessions for virtually 70% of that game. And Justin Fields throws 11 passes? What does that say? This is from Jack Miller, by the way. The Bears threw 11 passes in a 27-10 loss. Since 2000, there are only two instances of a team having fewer pass attempts in a double-digit loss. That was the Broncos in week 12 of 2020, the game where they literally did not have a quarterback because of COVID, the Kendall Hinton game. And David Carr with Houston in week 7 of 2005, which was towards the end of the David Carr era in Houston. Tell me why I should be optimistic about Justin Fields right now. Why? Look, I understand the offensive line isn't good. The receiving group is bad. But the guy has thrown 28 passes in two games. He leads the league in percentage of turnover-worthy throws at 14.3%, which might be a reason they haven't had him throwing the ball. And his depth-adjusted completion rate is second worst in the NFL. And the Chicago Bears are telling you they think he's bad. I need to see it against Houston. I need to see something. Darnell Mooney has 2 catches for 4 yards. And by the way, he has a higher target share than Mike Williams has because, well, Justin Fields has thrown only 28 passes. You need more It doesn't matter what your target share is if a guy is throwing 28 passes in two games. The only bear I can consider from a fantasy perspective right now is David Montgomery, who, by the way, must have heard people who said that Khalil Herbert's a better fit in that offense because he looked freaking awesome against the Packers. He was the only player who was worth a damn. He's the only player worth a damn for fantasy right now.
We've got Kansas City at Indy. Chiefs, I think we know about it. They spread it around a little bit more.
And they do spread it around.
They're real bad.
Ross, the line has moved so far against the Colts right now. And the money is coming on the under here. This opened at 2.5 because Kansas City's on the road. Kansas City giving 2.5. It has been bet to 6.5. I would expect buyback from the sharp guys if the Colts get to 7. But people do not want to bet on the Colts right now. This opened at 52. It's down to 49.5. You can find some 50 somewhere, too, if you like the over-under. But, I mean, the Indianapolis Colts, oh, boy. I mean, Paris Campbell, they're down their only wide receiver who's worth a damn in Michael Pittman, and Paris Campbell can't catch a pass. Matt Ryan throws 3 interceptions. The Colts have scored. We talked about the Browns. The Colts have scored on just 16.7% of their possessions. That's the lowest rate of the league. They ran just 48 plays against the Jaguars, got absolutely dominated in time of possession, and they failed to gain a first down on 6 of their 11 drives. That is, they've had the worst offense in football. And obviously they're going to try to come out and shorten this game and get Jonathan Taylor the rock, but how much longer can they do that against Kansas City? They need Michael Pittman. Like, there was a Colts beat writer, and it might have been Kevin Bowen. I might be misappropriating this, but he said, the Colts beat writer tweeted when Michael Pittman was injured, it was his opinion that Pittman is the single most indispensable player on this team. Based on what we saw in week 2, he might well be right about that. If you're dying for a wide receiver and Pittman doesn't play, Ashton Doolin is a deep option, especially in a game where the total is projected to be around 50. So consider that. But I don't know how you'd feel good about playing Paris Campbell right now based on what happened in that game against Jacksonville. So Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman, maybe Ashton Doolin. It's brutal out there. Oh, and Nyheim Hines is a pass-catching option in this. He's a flex option this week against Kansas City in this projected high-scoring environment. Kansas City might be able to name their score. I'm not too sure about the Colts.
What about the Chiefs?
So Patrick Mahomes made a comment early before the season. He was like, it was a fantasy comment. He's like, he apologized to fantasy players. He's like, I'm sorry, but it's going to be a different guy every week. Through 2 weeks, that's kind of borne out. Travis Kelce is the guy in the passing game, but all of their top wide receivers, like Juju, Smith-Schuster, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Mecole Hardman, all three of them have a target share between 14 and 15%. Now, that's less than Darnell Mooney's target share, but of course, you know, Patrick Mahomes throws a lot more passes than Justin Fields, so it's much more fantasy relevant. Kelce has been the first read, this is per fantasy points data, on 24% of Patrick Mahomes' throws, followed by Mecole Hardman. So those have been the top two guys. And now here is one that I am stunned. Jerick McKinnon is rostered in like 10% of Yahoo leagues. He has basically split snaps with Clyde Edwards-Helaire right down the middle. McKinnon's actually had played 2 more snaps. He's run more routes, and he's gotten more snaps inside the 10-yard line than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Edwards-Helaire looks great right now. I'm not telling you to bench Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but Jerick McKinnon should be rostered in far more leagues than he is right now. I think he's a usable flex.
Buffalo's at Miami. Buffalo's a wagon. Both these offenses are wagons, Joe.
Yeah, a Buffalo now tells you what kind of respect Buffalo's getting after Miami puts like 900 yards on the board against Baltimore. That Buffalo opened in this game on the road as a 3.5-point favorite and has been bet up to 5.5. So that tells you what people think about Buffalo. I don't think that's much. The over-under has been bet up to 53, by the way, which is a massive total. I think maybe some of the bettors want to see it again from Miami. Like, look, Baltimore collapsed. They didn't have nothing men in the secondary. But, man, the thing about Miami right now is we had that question all offseason. Well, I don't know what to do with Tyreek Hill. I don't know what to do with Jalen Waddle. Should I take Tyreek Hill in the second round or Jalen Waddle in the fourth round? Ross, the answer to that question is yes. That's what you should be doing, because you apparently should have drafted both of these guys. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are the first teammates to have 10 or more receptions, 150 more receiving yards, and 2 or more touchdowns in the same game in NFL history. That was the first time that has ever happened. Tua had 334 yards in the second half alone against Baltimore. The question here now for Miami, look, Mike Gesicki scored a touchdown. I'll take an L on that one. I bet his under on receiving yards. Well, Tua threw for 950,000 yards in that game, so somebody's catching the ball. I still don't like Gesicki for fantasy. Obviously, Tyreek and Waddle are in your lineup. The big question for Miami is this. Raheem Mostert and Chase Edmonds split snaps this week after Edmonds was the clear number one. And Mostert easily led the way in carries in a game in which Miami was playing from behind for virtually the entire game. That is something to watch out for. Neither one of those guys is more than a flex right now until we get some more information. But Mostert was an afterthought in week one. Chase Edmonds was the clear lead guy. Was not the case in week two in a game script when you would expect Chase Edmonds to have been by far the lead back.
What about for the Bills?
Okay, so Stephon Diggs is good. We know that. Josh Allen's good. We know that. The question now is, what is the status of Gabe Davis? We don't know. He got hurt in practice on a late in the week. Disgusting. Missed the Monday night game. We'll see what his status is. Allen and Diggs are just on the next level right now, though. By the way, that was a blowout win against the Titans, but we now know that in blowout wins, Devin Singletary is by far the Bills' lead back. He played 35 snaps. Zach Moss played just 13. James Cook played just 5 before, like, garbage time took over. It was the first three quarters, and then James Cook really ended up getting the 11 carries. So I don't want to overreact to James Cook leading them in rushing. And he did look good, but just to throw that out there, that was all in the fourth quarter in garbage time. You got Case Keenum in the game. The question was, who was going to replace Gabe Davis in that game? And the answer was nobody. It was Stephon Diggs. And when Stephon Diggs is getting open at will, Josh Allen's just going to throw the ball to him. Jake Kumerow had a couple of catches. Isaiah McKenzie had a couple of catches. Gilliam got in the end zone. But unless Gabe Davis plays, there's no other really usable wide receiver on Buffalo right now, unless, like, you have McKenzie in a very deep lineup. That's about it. Buffalo, very condensed, very good, Super Bowl favorite for an entirely valid reason. Let's hope Gabe Davis plays this week.
Detroit and Minnesota. Joe, Detroit's offense looks like it's the real deal.
It, very much so. You know, it looked like, you know, here's the funny part, Ross. You come out and everybody's like, oh, the Eagles are frauds. They gave up 35 points to Jared Goff. And, oh, man, that defense, the Eagles fans want. Ross, you're in the Philadelphia media market a lot. I mean, you know what? You know,
they wanted Gannon fired last week.
They wanted Gannon fired last week. What do the Eagles come out and do? They completely dominate the Vikings. Meanwhile, Goff and Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown are putting up 36 on the Commanders. So the Eagles held the Lions to their worst offensive performance of the season so far. The Lions, I think I said it on last week's podcast, they are an overs team right now. And the markets are reacting as such. This game has been bet up to 53.5. That is a higher total than Buffalo and Miami. So that is where the markets are going on the Detroit Lions, and that is great for fantasy for me because there's a lot of fun players on the Detroit Lions. Now, obviously, you know about Amon-Ra St. Brown. He set an NFL record last week. He's going to try to set another one this week. If he catches 8 passes this week against Minnesota, it will be in his 9th consecutive game. No player has ever done that. Tells you all you need to know about Amon-Ra St. Brown. DeAndre Swift playing hurt gets 7 touches and still puts up a top running back week because of that incredible receiving touchdown he had. He looks really good despite the injury, and you would hope that he's healthier this week. The one guy, by the way, Jared Goff's a viable quarterback streamer this week. If you just saw what Jalen Hurts just did to Minnesota, Jared Goff's a viable one this week. You want to see the Lions line get a little bit healthier, though. Their entire offensive interior line was out in that game against Washington, and they still put up 36 points. That tells you about this offense and this offensive scheme. The one guy I want to see get going a little bit more is TJ Hockenson. He had 7 targets in back-to-back games. The numbers have not been there yet, though. But Harrison Smith, the star safety for Minnesota, is coming off of a concussion suffered on Monday night. It is a short week. We'll see if he can clear the protocol. That is a potentially big loss for the Minnesota Vikings.
You got that right. What about the Vikings offensively? They really stalled out against the Eagles.
Cousins was terrible in that game. Primetime Kirk Cousins is a thing. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I would expect a get-right spot here. The Lions have given up, by the way, for Justin Jefferson, a get-right. Not that you're benching him, but the Lions have given up just a colossal amount of fantasy points to wide receivers through the first 2 weeks of the season. A.J. Brown dropped basically 160 yards on him in week one. Curtis Samuel and Jahan Dotson both score touchdowns in week two. Terry McLaurin goes for 75 yards. This is Amani Oruwariye, their top corner, was out against Washington, so I want to check his status this week. But obviously, this is a blow-up spot for Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, who really didn't produce until late in that game against Philadelphia when the game was basically out of hand. And I would think it's a get-right spot for Kirky on Sunday in this game. So, and Dalvin Cook, I know he only ran for 17 yards. That game was completely out of hand in Philadelphia. He'll get back on the wagon against Detroit.
What are you expecting from the Ravens in Foxborough?
So, here is one thing about Baltimore that really bothers me, and it bothered me earlier this season. And the response that I got to my tweet was essentially, hey, man, running backs don't matter. You can just get anything. Well, what are we told? We're told that a running quarterback, that the ability of that quarterback to tuck it and run really opens things up for the entire run game. Ross, you were offensive lineman. Do you think that's a true statement? If you have a mobile quarterback, does that open things up for the line and the running backs?
Yeah, because it takes away the number count advantage for the defense.
Right. So Lamar Jackson's out here, first player in NFL history, by the way, ever to throw for 300 yards in a game, rush for 100, not take a sack, and not turn the ball over. That was an MVP performance from Lamar Jackson. But the Ravens could not put that game away because they couldn't run it with anybody but Lamar Jackson. Justice Hill, 3 carries for 16 yards. Kenyon Drake, 6 for 8. Mike Davis, 5 for 4. Through two games, Baltimore Raven running backs have 30 carries for 79 yards. Now, is that? I don't think it's the scheme because Lamar Jackson, as we know, is a heck of a threat. The backs here are bad, and I think it was a little bit of malpractice by Eric DaCosta to go into the season knowing J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards were not going to be 100% and not addressing this backfield in a more significant way. Now, hopefully Dobbins gets back maybe this week. He hasn't played in the first two games, and things look better, but the Ravens were unable to put that game away because they couldn't salt away the clock. But for the Ravens right now, there are three players you can play for fantasy, and they are all guys who must be in your lineup. Lamar Jackson, Rashad Bateman, and Mark Andrews. That's as easy a team as I have to break down because those three guys are weekly starters, obviously. They need, and hopefully J.K. Dobbins comes along and joins those ranks. But right now, their run game is non-functional with the exception of Lamar Jackson.
And then the Patriots, their offense is struggling. They tried to lean on the run.
Yeah, and what was really weird is, like, you're looking at their backfield breakdown and you're like, well, it's really a lot of Damian Harris. And what's happening with Ramondre Stevenson? Well, first and foremost, the Patriots have had just 19 offensive possessions. They've scored on just 4 of those 19 possessions, which is third worst in the league. So that's part of the problem. Ramondre Stevenson, though, in week 2, significantly outsnapped Damian Harris, 42-27. And ran 23 routes to Damian Harris's 10. So all his opportunity was there. He just didn't get the ball. It was kind of bizarre, but those are encouraging trends for Ramondre Stevenson. Damian Harris also picked up a little bit of a knee injury at the end of that game, something to watch this week. Mac Jones, by the way, last year, he was far better with play action. His completion percentage was 4.7% better, and his yards per attempt were 2.2%, was 2.2 yards higher with play action. You want to take a wild guess on where Mac Jones ranks in play action passing rate this year under Matt Patricia and Joe Judge?
Bottom 5.
Dead last. So, Ross, sometimes I just sit here and I'm baffled by it. Nelson Aguilar had a great game. The only real receiver I trust here is Jakobi Meyers, though. And he's just kind of a boring flex him if you got him type of guy. If like you have like a wide range of injuries at the receiver position, like I had in a number of leagues last week. But really, until I see this offense pick it up, this is not a team I want to be dabbling in for fantasy a whole lot. Slow, ineffective, uncreative. Not the best combination.
Bengals haven't been a real good combination so far this year.
They have been horrifying. Their offensive line was terrible. So the Bengals are opened as 5-point favorites. They're currently 5-point favorites against the Jets. The over-under has been bet up to 45 from 43. I would expect Jets money, Bengals money to be coming in here. Their backs are against the wall. They're 0-2 against teams that started Mitchell Trubisky and Cooper Rush at quarterback. Now, why is that? The offensive line has been atrocious. Joe Burrow has taken 13 sacks. He's the second most sacked quarterback in the league, behind only Justin Fields. And his pressure is getting to him, by the way, way too quick. 2.11 seconds until pressure arrives. It's the ninth worst rate in the NFL. That's per fantasy points data. And Burrow, you know, Ross wants to throw that ball deep. He wants to get Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins the ball down the field. But because pressure is getting in his face, just 4.5% of Burrow's pass attempts have traveled 20 or more yards in the air. That is the third worst rate. They're operating a dink and dunk offense with maybe some of the best weapons in the NFL. Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Hayden Hurst, Tyler Boyd. That's a really good group of receivers. And the offensive line is holding everything back. The question is, will the Jets be able to get to him the way the Cowboys and the Steelers did? Because the Steelers had T.J. Watt. The Cowboys had Micah Parsons. I'm not quite sure the Jets have somebody who can take over a game the way those two guys can.
What about the Jets offensively? Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall,
yeah.
Flacco, Joe, they got some guys.
I mean, Ross, if I were to tell you on this podcast in July that Joe Flacco would be leading the NFL in pass attempts through 2 weeks, you would have kicked me off the podcast and you'd have a new co-host, but that's exactly been the case. Garrett Wilson looks like their best wide receiver, by the way. He leads the team in target share, air yards, and yards per route run. And unfortunately, that's been at the expense of Elijah Moore, who has just 12 targets in two games. Elijah Moore, who was one of the fantasy stars in the second half of last year, is sixth on the Jets in receiving fantasy points so far. Sixth. Behind Corey Davis, behind obviously Garrett Wilson. He's behind Breece Hall. He's behind Michael Carter. Oh, boy. It's rough out there, but I think he will get his. I think he will. And I think this environment, I think Cincinnati's in a get-right spot here. I think this game is going to be higher scoring than anticipated, and that's why the over has been bet up. I like both Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore as wide receiver threes this week. By the way, in the backfield, Michael Carter is still operating as the number one. He has outsnapped Breece Hall 93-57 through two games. It's basically exactly like the Broncos backfield was last year. They have two guys who they kind of view as number ones, but Carter is clearly ahead right now. Both of those guys are flexes. I would anticipate Breece Hall to get more work as the season goes on, though.
The Raiders taking on the Titans. Davante Adams let a lot of people down last week.
Yeah, he did score at least. You know, there was a couple situations where I thought there was a grease the squeaky wheel. We'll talk about that when we talk Philadelphia. We'll talk about that when we talk the Rams. And I thought this was one as well. They got Hunter Renfrow involved a lot more. But by the way, the markets are absolutely collapsing on the Titans right now. The over-under here hasn't moved too much. It opened at 46. I'm seeing some 46s, some 45.5s out there. But the Raiders, when this line opened, were underdogs. That has flipped. They were one-point underdogs. They are now two-point favorites. And I have to imagine more Raider money is going to come in because, well, they're 0-2 and actually have talent, whereas the Titans are 0-2 and don't. So I would think this is a get-right spot for the Raiders. We do have to see the status, though, by the way, Ross, of Hunter Renfrow. He was getting checked for a concussion on that brutal hit that he took on the game-losing fumble against the Cardinals last week. Davante Adams is going to get a lot of targets. Look at what Stephon Diggs did to the Titans. That's all I got to say about that.
What about the Titans offensively?
Oh, man. You know, I said earlier how Pittsburgh has punted on the second most possessions in the NFL. This is the team that's punted the most. Tennessee Titans. Getting that rookie some workouts. It's brutal out there. I mean, Ryan Tannehill in 39 games with A.J. Brown averages 8.2 yards per attempt and 6.5% passing touchdown rate. In his 9 games without A.J. Brown, 6.8 yards per attempt, 4% passing touchdown rate. Seems like that guy's kind of important, right? when the Titans are playing from behind, Derrick Henry is not playing. And Hassan Haskins is out there getting the passing down snaps. Derrick Henry's day was salvaged by a touchdown, but he had only 25 rushing yards, and he didn't have a target. If the Titans are playing from behind, I mean, this is the worst case scenario I envisioned for the Titans. The offense is bad. I thought the vibes were bad for the Titans. That has borne out in two games thus far, and it's really been a rough going for Derrick Henry. Taylor Lewan might be out for the season now. Things are going to get worse in Tennessee before they get better.
Finally, we've got the Wentz Bowl. Eagles, Commanders.
You know, I mean, here's the deal with the Eagles. I mean, Jalen Hurts, he was freaking phenomenal against Minnesota. Like, I mean, that was the best I've ever seen Hurts play. And there is the greasing the squeaky wheel. Devontae Smith doesn't catch a ball in week one. 7 for 80, catches all 7 of his targets against any, and was targeted on the first play of the game, by the way. So Devontae Smith, he's back on the wide receiver 3 radar. You got to play A.J. Brown. You got to play Dallas Goedert. You got to play Miles Sanders at this point, who looks really good out there. Kenny Gainwell had an interception go off his hands at the end of the game. So we'll see if that affects his usage going forward. But Philadelphia is a machine right now, and Washington has been a team that scored a lot of points and has given up a lot of points thus far this season. Philadelphia is up to a 6.5-point favorite in this game. The over-under got bet down from 50 to 47.5. I'm not sure that's the right move here on the over-under, but I think a large part of it is because Philadelphia's defense looks so good against Minnesota on Monday night.
Washington's been putting up some numbers. Jahan Dotson. Yeah. From your hometown, pretty much, Joe.
Yeah, Dotson, yeah, he's from Nazareth, PA, and also went to my alma mater. First and foremost, Curtis Samuel's a thing. What? He's led this team in targets in back-to-back weeks. So I wanted to see it again. You have seen it. You can play him as a wide receiver 3. When the Eagles played the Commanders last year, Darius Slay shadowed Terry McLaurin. I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year for two reasons. Number one, they have James Bradbury, who's also pretty freaking good. And number two, Dotson is a much better number two receiver than whatever the Commanders had last year. So keep that in mind. They're putting Dotson in the slot a little bit. So that touchdown reception he had came out of the slot. Wentz was atrocious in that first half against Detroit. He was great in the second half against Detroit. He's kind of had that kind of two sides of the coin deal going on in these first two games. But ultimately, the numbers have been there. And I would expect Wentz to be a popular streamer this week. The question is, we know what happened to Wentz mentally in Philadelphia. Man, if he turns the ball over early in that game, what is going to happen? It is a home game for the Commanders. So throwing that out there. But boy, I am very anxious to see how Wentz plays in this game.
What about is there anything else to talk about?
Well, Antonio Gibson got a touchdown opportunity. He had 4 targets, but he was kind of a disappointment last week, 14 to 28 and a touchdown. But he did get the touchdown opportunity. He did get the goal line opportunity. But J.D. McKissic caught 7 passes. Wentz is checking it down a little bit more. That was clearly a focus of the Commanders' coaching. Oh, and Logan Thomas, by the way. Logan Thomas, by the way, tight end 1. He's a tight end 1 right now. He's getting the ball.
Speaking of disappointment, I'm a little disappointed. Episode 1 is over. Thankfully, we have episode 2. This is the show that's so nice. We do it twice. Make sure you download and listen to the second episode. All the Sunday late games, the Sunday nighter and the Monday nighter on episode 2. Not even going to say the other stuff. Just listen.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, Business of Sports, and the College Draft. All available at Apple Podcasts, RossTucker.com, or wherever podcasts can be found.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.